Good, so we are still in Daniel chapter 1 tonight. And we saw last week something of Daniel's stand that he had made, how he had resolved in his heart not to eat the king's food, not to defile himself with the king's food. Now this word resolve, it really means that he didn't toy with the idea. It means that he had settled it and established it and that he had made it firm in his heart. Now, in one sense, that's all well and good. You know, Daniel had made that decision in his heart, but that decision, in a sense, was still to be approved. It was to be approved by Ashpenaz, but ultimately by God, it would be approved. And this man, of course, these men had been taken into the king's re-educating program, as we've seen, and that involved certain things. And along with that, it involved the diet that the king was laying out before them. But as we go through this book, indeed, we see very clearly that these men, these servants of God, they were prepared to die if necessary. They were prepared to die if necessary. Yet they valued their lives. There isn't a single human being on earth that doesn't value their lives. And this is the first thing I want us to look at tonight. Daniel valued the life that God had given to him. Daniel had valued the life that God had given to him. Although Daniel and his friends were prepared, if necessary, to die in the service of God and for God and for their faith, this did not mean that they did not value and appreciate their own lives. And they simply weren't going to throw their lives away foolishly. Okay? Part of serving God is that we understand how good everything is that God has given to us, and then weighed against his greatness, then we weigh up what is most precious to us. Is it God himself, or is it even our own lives? Now, Daniel had resolved that he was not going to eat the king's food, as had his friends, these other three men. But had he come to the king's servant with the attitude simply, I am not going to eat that food. If he had come to the king's servant with that attitude, he was as good as a dead man. Daniel would have been a dead man. Ashpenaz would have gone back to the king and would have said, this man refuses to eat the food that you have set before him. What do you think Nebuchadnezzar would say to that? He would send back a commandment, put him to death. Instantly. Put him to death instantly. And we'll see later on how Nebuchadnezzar was so upset with Daniel's three friends that he heated up the furnace even hotter than it was. It didn't need to be any hotter. That was just his anger. He wanted to prove the point. And he heats up this furnace. Nebuchadnezzar was the king. He gave commandments. He expected them to be carried out. And he didn't take commandments from others. As I remember the centurion that came to Jesus, he said, I myself am a man under authority. I say to this one, do this, and he does it. Go, and he does it. That's what the king expected from his servants. If he told them to do something involving the Jews and other people that he brought into his land, he expected that commandment to be fulfilled and carried out. If Nebuchadnezzar, he was the kind of man, if he said, it's pork chops on the menu, he meant you'll eat them. And he meant you'll eat them, you'll like them, and you'll ask for more. That's his position as the king. And if Daniel had simply come with the attitude, I'm not eating that, then we wouldn't have this great book. We wouldn't have. And we'll come to look at Daniel's attitude in a moment. But I want us to look firstly at the preciousness of life that Daniel and his friends enjoy and are not prepared to throw it away foolishly, but they're going to serve God with their lives, okay? This is what's very important for us here. Daniel and his friends wanted to be faithful to God with their lives, and in that faithfulness, they wanted to live out the full years of their lives. They wanted to live out the full years of their lives, and we see this, isn't it, in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 21. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. In other words, that tells us that Daniel lived to a right old age. He lived to a right old age. And this shows us something of the wisdom that this boy Daniel had from the beginning, and how he faithfully lives for God throughout his life in a pagan land. In a pagan land. And that is a huge challenge to us, I really believe, about wisdom as the people of God. Now, life is precious. Daniel knew that. His friends knew that. And life is God-given. And life in its fullness is to be in a relationship with God through the Lord Jesus Christ. And Daniel and his friends understood that the fullness of life was to be in a relationship with God, the true God of heaven, and to enjoy that covenant with him, even though they were still even though now they were outside of the covenant land which God had brought them into. They had respect for their lives, and they had respect for other people's lives as well, as we'll see how Daniel goes about things. Now, we all love life. I'm pretty sure we all love life. We all love to be alive. We all love to wake up in the morning and see the morning break, particularly in the summer, or in the winter, and to see a really chilly morning and the stars are still out. We like to wake up and listen to the birds singing. Well, I like to listen to the birds singing when I wake up. And when I lived in Scotland, there were lots of birds singing. They all seem to have gone off to the countryside at the moment. Have you noticed that? You're trying to listen for a bird singing, you can't hear any singing. But I used to wake up in Scotland and I would hear the birds singing, and then I would, before going to work, I would be sitting at the table, and I'd open the kitchen door to turn the volume up, so to speak, to listen to the birds singing. And sometimes I just sat there before going to work, and I'd be drinking a cup of tea, and I'd just be talking to the Lord with my eyes open. You can do that. You can talk to the Lord with your eyes open. And just thanking him for the day. Lord, what a beautiful day. Thank you that I'm alive. Thank you for life. Thank you for the birds that are singing. Thank you for the beauty of the trees. Thank you for the work you've done in my life. In spite of all my sins and rebellion against you, thank you for what you've done in my life. You know, some people say, when I'm dead, I'm dead. When I'm dead, I'm dead. It's so matter of fact, isn't it? So matter of fact, as if there's no meaning or reason or purpose or direction to life. When I'm dead, I'm dead. As if life is not to be prized and treasured, and God to be thanked for that gift that he's given to us. And even Christians, we can be guilty of this. We can just say, well, I'm just waiting for heaven, brother. I'm just waiting for heaven. We're all, as Christians, waiting for heaven. But if we use that attitude, it is as if we're completely disconnected from life. It is as if we're completely disconnected from the business of living and from embracing all the good things that God has given to us in life. Life is to be enjoyed and to be embraced. Now, it is true that the Apostle Paul said, I would rather depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. And David in Psalm 63, this beautiful psalm, as the Scottish Metrical Version puts it, since better is thy love than life. So David values the love of God and looks at it and says, it's better than life. Then in that psalm, he goes on to say, my lips thee praise shall give. In thy name will I lift my hands and bless thee while I live. E'en as with marrow and with fat, my soul shall fill it be. Then shall my mouth with joyful lips sing praises unto thee. What's Paul and David saying? What are they saying in these statements like, your love is better than life, I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far? Are they saying that life is rubbish, it can be just chucked into the bin, get rid of it, it doesn't matter? Is Paul just sitting on the couch saying, I'm going to heaven, brother, I wonder what's on BBC Two? Does Paul treat life like that, or does David treat life like that? No, they didn't treat life like that. And neither did Daniel and his friends treat life like that. They embraced life. They engaged in the business of living, and they embraced everything that God had to give to them. But what they are actually saying, Paul and David, is they are evaluating their lives and saying, this is the most precious thing I have, humanly speaking, is my physical life. But they knew that it wasn't the sum totality of what they were. They knew that life was more than just their physical life. And what they're really saying is, They are valuating the thing they appreciate, they value the most, their physical lives, against the greatness of God's. And when they're doing that, they're really saying, if it's required, because we believe in you so much, and we believe that your way is the right way, and we believe that you are the eternal God, we are willing to give up the thing that we prize the most if it's required of us. That's what they're saying. We love life and we'll live it to the full. But should your service ask of me my life, I will give it. That's what they're saying. Since better is your love than life. But they embrace life, and even death will not be a loss, but a gain. And they embrace it. And David says, since better is your love than life, my lips shall praise thee, give you praise. And in thy name I will lift my hands and bless thee while I live. See what he's doing? He's fully engaged in living while he's waiting for heaven. And his life and his engagement in life is the praise, the worship, and the service of God. And this is Daniel and his friends. They're engaged in the business of life. And the business of life is about knowing God. Our lives on earth is about knowing God. And because Daniel and his friends are in the business of living, and because the business of their lives is God, they will be faithful to him with their lives. And they will live in the fullness of life. And the fullness of our lives on earth is only experienced when we love God, and when we love to learn about God, and when our knowledge of God fuels the decisions, the directions that we take in life, and when it fuels our obedience and our praise, our thanksgiving, and our worship of him, even in the most difficult of circumstances. And I do not say that lightly. There's two choices: give in or continue. And by continuing, we show our hope in God, even in the most painful and demanding of circumstances. God has laid before every Christian believer a cross. And God laid before his own son a cross. And because he never took the cross away from his son, we should not expect that he will take away the cross from us either. See, the burden of carrying a cross intensifies the joy of heaven. So when a Christian says, in a flippant way, I'm just waiting for heaven, brother, he's not really engaged in the business of life, and he has not experienced the burden of a cross. Because when he does experience the burden of the cross, he will say, I'm waiting for heaven, brother, but I'm serving God with my life here on earth as fully and as best as I can. And I want to honor him with my service and with my life. And this is Daniel and his friends. They love life. And they're all going to throw it away foolishly. But they're going to serve God. And they're going to go from their youth to their old age, valuing the life that God has given them, and yet being faithful every step of the way. Daniel and his friends were in Babylon. They couldn't change that. But they weren't going to compromise, and they weren't going to conform to Babylon, and they weren't going to trade their covenant relationship with God for a covenant relationship with Nebuchadnezzar. And if required, they would lay down their lives in the service of God. But they would not throw their lives away foolishly. And there's a great difference about laying down a man's life for God and throwing his life away foolishly because he hasn't been wise on how he's gone about in the service of God. And that brings us really to the wisdom of how Daniel approaches this situation. And the second point to look at, the manner of Daniel's stand. This is what's important for us as well here. The manner of Daniel's stand. Now, it is important when we make a stand for the Lord, how we go about that stand. You know, when I was a young Christian, it was kind of a standard saying amongst Christians, how's your stand for the Lord, brother? You know, when you were working amongst non-Christians and all the rest, as we tried to encourage each other, how's your stand for the Lord? But notice how Daniel approaches here, here in verse 8. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food, and or with the wine that he drank.
Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself.
Notice how Daniel goes about this, the manner of his stand. He asks permission. He asks permission of this man. Now, it's clear here, we're told, that he has the favour. God has caused him to have favour with the chief official here, or the eunuch. And he has, and that will be a big theme of this book, that Daniel has that favour. But here is a young man, he's a boy, he's got wisdom, and that wisdom comes from the fact that his life is centred on the Word of God and that it has impact on his character. Now, a wrong move here from Daniel would not only have endangered his own life, but it would have endangered this man's life as well. This man was directly answerable to the king. And when the king gave commandments, he expected them to be followed through. And he expected them to be carried out, as we see in verse 3, when he told them to bring in some of those who had come from Judah and gave instructions about what they should look like. Now, this man had a great responsible position before the king. The word here, eunuch, is used. But the Hebrew word here actually doesn't necessarily mean the natural understanding that we have of eunuchs. The word here, it's used in the NIV, is translated official, or in the New American Standard, it's translated commander. And checking another translation, it says chief of the court officials. The same Hebrew word is used of Potiphar. And we know that Potiphar was married. He was married. Usually those who were eunuchs, in the sense that we understand it, were those that were in charge of the king's wives and concubines and so on. So here it could really be referring to somebody of a position of authority and in a high place. Now, the request is dangerous because Nebuchadnezzar had a hire and fire policy. No, we talk about hire and fire policy. Nebuchadnezzar had a head-on, head-off policy, a bit more radical than hire and fire, isn't it? And we see this from the man's own words in verse 9. And God gave Daniel favour and compassion and insight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear the Lord my king, who has signed your food and drink, for why should he see you looking worse than others? And sorry, I've read the wrong verse there, but he said he fears the king. And he talks about the king would have his head. Yeah, at the end of that verse. So you would endanger my head with the king, at the end of verse 10 there, that his head would be endangered. In other words, it would be gone from his shoulders. Now, when we're making a stand, it's important how we make that stand. We're not simply reacting to a situation, and we're not simply blowing off steam. That's not a stand, okay? That's a reaction to a situation. Making a true stand involves insight, it involves wisdom, and it involves indeed intelligence, to think things through intelligently and to think them about them so that we don't lose our head in all kinds of different situations, so to speak. And a wrong stand and a wrong reaction can do a great deal of damage to God's glory and to his church, both inside and outside. People will simply see us as religious zealots. It's all about how we go about things. That's very important. People will see us simply as religious zealots if we go about it the wrong way. Now, Daniel applies wisdom and insight and intelligence about how he goes about this. He thinks through his stand. He thinks through the reason for it. He thinks through how to approach it humbly. And he already anticipates the concerns that this man is going to raise for him before he even comes to him. And he has a suggestion to make, isn't it, there in these verses 12 through to 13, where he talks about providing them with vegetables and testing them for 10 days. This is Daniel's solution. Now, without a doubt, Daniel explained to this man the reason why he was making this stand. Without a doubt, he explained it to him. And he would have explained to him that it was his faith in God. that he was making this stand for. Because he certainly could not have come to this man and said to him, look, I don't like to eat the food. When the man had been given a direct commandment from the king of Babylon, he would have expected a very high and noble explanation why Daniel and his friends didn't want to eat the food. And there, we can be confident of that. But he gave him an explanation why. Now, if Daniel and his friends are asking this man to make an exception in their case over against everybody else, and in effect they are asking this man to go against the king's commandment for their benefit, clearly they would have had to give a noble explanation for that. And that would have been... And the response is positive from this man. He says, well, you know, I'd like to help you, but I'm a bit afraid the king will have my head for it. So Daniel then comes forward with this plan, isn't it? Test your servants for 10 days. Or some translations, please test your servants for 10 days. This again is this wonderful attitude of Daniel. He's not simply saying, I'm not eating the food. He's saying, test your servants. Not only is this brilliant how he goes about it, but it is also very Christ-like. It has a Christ-like attitude. Now, brothers and sisters, too many of us make stands on things and we don't think them through. We just make a stand and we're in danger of just blowing off steam. We don't think them through. We may think that we're doing something for the glory of God, but we use harsh words, perhaps, hard words. Our tones are hard. And that's what people see. They see somebody who's got harsh words, harsh tones, demanding and threatening. That's very different to how Daniel goes about things here. Very different. We want people to see something of the Spirit of Christ in us. We want people to see something of the transformation that Jesus Christ has brought to our lives. And why we are holding him out to them as the answer for their lives, and to show them that the fullness of life is found in Jesus. And we wouldn't do that if we just blow off at them. That's all they'll see. They'll say, there's a religious zealot. Don't have anything to do with that lot. That's how people will view us if we behave like that. We may not defile ourselves with the king's food, but we're defiling ourselves with our own hearts. It's not what we're putting into ourselves that's going to defile us. It's what's coming out of us if we behave like that. Our harsh words, our hard words, our demands, our difficult tones, the smoke that comes from our ears and the fire that comes from our eyes and the words that come from our mouths. These do not honor God. If we make that kind of stand, we dishonor the holiness of God. And we've actually put people further away from us rather than drawing us. You know, Daniel's already into explaining to this man something of the truth of God on day one of being enlisted into the king's re-educating program. Isn't that amazing? Now, why do we behave like that? Sometimes we make a stand and we get it all wrong. Well, maybe sometimes we're just standing on our own convictions. And there's always the danger of being on an ego trip. Remember, Elijah said, I alone am left. I alone am left, he said. We saw Sinclair B. Ferguson's quote last week when he said, if Christians first need to be heroes. Now, he said, Christians are often heroes in their own imagination about making great stands and so on. But sometimes Christians can take their imaginations too far as well, and they want to be heroes in public. And we can make stands for the wrong reasons. We can feel, well, I am the one that's faithful. The church is in apostasy. And it's true that large amounts of the church throughout the world are in apostasy. But God has his people everywhere. As he reminded Elijah that he had 7,000 in Israel who had not bowed the knee to Baal. Now, the church needs to make a stand on many, many things, and that's very important. But how we go about that stand is equally important. Are you concerned about things in society? Are we concerned about things in Blackfin and Sidcup and so on? Well, we should be. And sometimes there may be a cost to write to our local MP, you know, to write to him or her, or even to meet with them, individually or as a church. But when we do that, We should be very careful how we speak to them. And we should show a lot of grace so that they see something of the reality of Jesus alive and at work in us. Do you need to speak to somebody at work about something? Do it. But use the grace of the Lord Jesus Christ when you speak to them. Otherwise, they'll just think there's another religious nutcase. That's how people bag us, isn't it, sometimes? We have the greatest truths and the riches of this great message that God has given to us, and we blow it because of the way we go about it. We blow it. Do you need to raise a concern, or feel you need to raise a concern about something in church? Well, we need to apply this kind of thinking. Why am I making this stand? Does this stand have the favor of God on it? And by that I mean, does God's word qualify the stand that you're making? If it doesn't, then it doesn't have the favor of God on it. We need to be very important by that, that we look. Daniel had the favor of God, but we need to look, what I'm doing, does it have the favor of God on it? Or am I just doing this because I don't like something? Or is it because there's some long-standing tradition that I loved and I want to fight for it? And even if that means trouble and difficulties in the church, we can make ourselves the source of trouble, brothers and sisters. There's a danger in that. And we actually think that we're making a stand for the Lord. So always come back and say, does this stand have the favor of God on it? Check it against God's word, and then it will have God's favor on it. If it does, and if it doesn't, then we need to rethink things. Think it through carefully. A wrong stand, we can make a wrong stand, and therefore we don't have the spirit of Daniel when we make that stand. Now, I'm going to say again that Daniel was a boy of about 14 to 17 years old. That's very important. He was a boy, and that's very remarkable if he is about 14 to 17, because he does live on over 70 years in Babylon, after coming to Babylon. That's remarkable because there are many Christians who are middle-aged or aged who don't show the wisdom that Daniel at the age of 14 to 17 shows here. And that's a real challenge to us, to have a boy so young and to be so wise, and we who are older get it wrong so much of the time. And even if we make a right stand, sometimes we go about it the wrong way. And that's damaging inside of the church and outside of the church. And yet we may feel justified in how we've done it and why we've done it. Shouting or raising our voice or making a noise does not necessarily mean that we're being faithful to God. Does not mean that we necessarily have God's favor on our lives. Daniel's stand had God's favor. And after the 10 days here, we see that it works out very well. And they look healthier and fitter than all the men, the young men that ate the king's meat and drank the king's wine. Now, no doubt in those 10 days, Daniel and his friends were focused on prayer and calling out to the Lord. But they were humbly confident, you see. They were humbly confident. Daniel suggested this to this man because he was humbly confident that God would bring it through for him. He trusted God for the outcome. Sometimes we may make a stand on something, but we're not trusting God for the outcome. That's why we handle it very badly. We shout, we make a noise, we're very robust about it. And the reason that we use all of these human things is because we don't actually trust that God will bring it through. So we try to bring it through ourselves. Too many of us try to establish things by force. But if it really has God's favor on it, it will be established by grace. We won't have to shout. I'm not saying that we don't have to defend the faith. Don't get me wrong on that. But if something truly has God's favor, it will be established by grace. By grace. And that's what we see here. Grace, isn't it? God establishes here for Daniel and his friends, by grace, in a pagan land, something that's humanly impossible. They eat vegetables. They look better than everybody else. Now, there's goodness in vegetables. We're told to eat our five a day, every day. Our Talita at the moment is a vegetarian. I don't believe it's going to last forever, but we have to let her run with it for a while at least. But it's God that's at work here, isn't it? It's God's favour. And not only his favour for these vegetables, but also afterwards. We see in this passage how he blesses those young men with learning, with wisdom, with understanding. And they're found 10 times better and 10 times wiser than all of the other young men that were entered into the king's service. And they're exalted. Now this passage ends with Daniel as an old man. It ends as an old man who lived out the fullness of his years, who loved his life, who treasured life, and who was faithful to God throughout that life. As we go through the book, that's qualified for us. He was lived in all the fullness, and he didn't compromise his faith at any time. He made the right stands, and he made them the right way, in the right manner, all the time. That's a challenge, surely, for us tonight as we really come to a close here. Those of us who are older, whether we're middle-aged or older, I'll leave it at that, older. When we look at this young man and as boy, he teaches us so much about what it is to make a godly stand and what it looks like. Now, Daniel served God all those years in a pagan land with the wisdom and the understanding and the humility that he had from God by walking with God and keeping close to God. But that's a challenge for ourselves, isn't it? Here is a boy, 14 to 17, behaving in such a mature way, with such understanding and wisdom. In a pagan land, he serves his God faithfully. And yet, as Christians, brothers and sisters, if we're honest, we find it hard to serve God maturely, even within the community of God's people. We find that hard at times, isn't it? To serve God faithfully with this kind of wisdom. In spite of all of our learning and of all of our age and all of our years, so often we still fail to display the wisdom of the boy, Daniel. The wisdom of the boy who grew into a man and was faithful throughout. So, we need to think why we're making a stand. We need to think how we should make that stand. And we need to think about why, and does that stand have God's favour on it? Well, may God bless his word to us, and may to him indeed be the praise and the glory.